Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. Got a chance to talk to Jeff Shackelford today. He is a perfect person to talk to right now with everything that's going on in the world of golf, the Premier Golf League, the distance report that came out this week from the USGA and R&A, and he's kind of at the epicenter of all of it in terms of his background in course architecture. He'd done a lot of reporting on the PGL, the Premier Golf League, and done a great job with it, with all the information. There's a ton of information that's out there. There's a ton of, it's hard to connect all the dots, and you guys should check out his stuff on jeffshackelford.com because I think he does a great job of connecting, you know, why does this matter for Tiger? Who's involved? How's this going to go? Who are all the players? How does this affect the PGA Tour? How does it affect media? Where's the money coming from? He addresses all those different things. And we talked about some of them today, just kind of some kind of lingering questions that I had. Wanted him to explain some of the stuff that was going on to people who maybe hadn't heard of the PGL or what's kind of taking place right now. So a really interesting conversation. Jeff is a great guy to talk to. He's one of my favorite people when you're on the road at a major championship and kind of hanging out at night, maybe having a beer or whatever. If he's around and the microphones are off and you can just talk about whatever in the world of golf, he's the best. He's great to talk to about that stuff just because he's been doing it so long and had a really fun and good and successful career. So I always enjoy talking to him both on a podcast and on some of these road trips that this circus takes together. So big thanks to him, and I hope you guys enjoy the interview. Okay, Jeff Shackelford, jeffshackelford.com, author of many books, Golf Channel. Where are you? Is there any place that you're not, front facing?
I'm not at Golf Week any longer.
Okay, so there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Jeff, you've been doing a lot of great reporting, a lot of great writing on jeffshackelford.com about the PGL. This league. Can we call it the PGL?
I guess. I mean, they'll change the name again when the Premier League probably sues them. Or
I thought about that.
Yeah, I don't understand how they get away with it. But there is a Premier Lacrosse League that the investors are part of. So clearly they have got some sense that they can get away with it.
Yeah.
But I don't see how they can.
So the Premier Golf League, this thing that has kind of come up, every once in a while for the last 5, 6, 7 years. And it's really kind of hit home this year. And I have a million questions. And I guess the one off the top that I think most people that are kind of tuned into this are the one that they're primarily thinking about is this a binary thing? Is it Tiger or nothing? Is it as simple as if you get Tiger, it can happen, and if you don't get Tiger, it can't happen? Where do you stand on how that plays out?
I think at this very moment that is correct, that it is all about Tiger. If they were to resurface with this in 3 or 4 more years, probably not, but you never know. He looked awfully good at Torrey Pines physically. I mean, he looked way better than he did a year ago. So he may be relevant still in 5 years. And then the question would be, at that point, how important is he to this kind of thing? But I think at the moment he's absolutely vital to it, taking off. It's hard to imagine this breaking off. Alan Shipnook made a good case for them being able to do this without him. But I don't think it really has legs, without his name, his interest in being one of these franchise owners and really is saying, I've done all I can on the PGA Tour, and this is a fun way to end my career and make a lot of money.
I think I agree. And I think, you know, I don't know. There's so many different angles to come at this from. I think one of the ones that I've been kind of thinking about is it seems like it's this, sort of, it seems like everything has emanated from this like shadow group where it's like, I don't totally know like who these organizations are, where they're coming from. Do you think it's actually, do you think they're going to be more public about things in the near future? Or do you think everything's going to be kept behind the curtain until a certain time?
I think they'll try to keep it as secret as possible. The Q&A that they did, the faux press conference, was a result of my blog post on it. And I don't think they wanted to do that. I got the sense it was, I mean, it was fine. It was thrown together pretty quickly and it was really mostly copy and pasted from their documents. But I admire the fact that they've been very secretive. And I think it gives them, while some people think it's the stealth approach suggests that they're up to no good or that their money sources are questionable. I think it's admirable that they've been at this long and that they have been stealth and that they aren't using the press or public forums to make essentially a hostile takeover bid. I mean, all the stuff in there about we want to work with the PGA Tour was kind of silly. There's no scenario where the two coexist that I can see. But so I think they're to be admired for doing that. And, you know, people picked up Rory's comment that they've been talking to him since 2014 and went, wow, see, that's a sign it's not legitimate. And I would say the opposite, that they've probably, including the name, we know for sure, shaped this idea over that amount of time and refined it. And there will still be big changes. There's no way they're going to try to play 18 tournaments. It just doesn't do what they hope it will do, which is give these elite players kind of what they want, which is about a 20-week schedule over the course of the year when you include the majors and a few other silly events or whatever, places in their home countries or whatever it is. So I think that that will be modified too. And everybody I talked to in my reporting on this said it had been knocked down to 10 already, but they came back and said, no, it's 18. And I think it's some sort of a bargaining chip of some kind.
So speaking of Rory, I have his quote from Torrey. He said, these guys have exploited a couple of holes in the system. I think he's talking about the PGA Tour here. The way that golf at the highest level is nowadays and how it's sort of transitioned from a competition tour to more entertainment. It's on TV, people coming out to watch. It's definitely a different time than what it was before. Do you think that's a universally shared, sort of mantra among the players? Or is that like the top five guys that are sort of like thinking about it this way?
I think that's what this has revealed, that there is a sentiment, within that community of the top 15 or so guys, that we have probably all underestimated. It's a very strong sentiment that they are propping up, the lower half of the tour. I mean, you hear bits and pieces of it, but, this has sort of, exposed, because Rory, the next sentence in that statement was a little, comment about the underpaid nature of the top players. And that's coming from somebody who I sense is way less material than he's ever been.
Yeah.
Who certainly has no need for more money and is really obviously now playing for, titles and history and thinking of history, because he certainly can retire tomorrow if he wants. So I thought that was fascinating that he, after making those comments, he then threw that in. After sort of putting down the idea and ultimately that's what this has exposed, is that this group is a little angrier or more resentful than we probably realized at many, many elements in the structure of the tour in terms of money and in terms of, you know, it's also just oversaturation. I think they get tired of being asked to play certain events or certain times a year when they don't want to. And part of that's just a product of the wraparound schedule, and they view the wraparound schedule as something created to provide more playing opportunities and more purses for the other half of the tour.
Well, and Bob Herrick had this good thing on ESPN.com. I think it might have been on Monday this week. And this quote is from an agent who he said wished not to be identified. This agent said, "How can an organization negotiate hundreds of millions of dollars of TV contracts and someone like Tiger or Rory goes out and has the same chance of making the same money as some guy who's come off the Korn Ferry Tour?" Which is true. There's no arbitration panel. And no judge would say that that's a fair economic model, which I think is also true. And so I don't know, is there a solution if you're a PGA Tour or a European Tour to where you can say, well, this is probably not the best thing long term. Like, this is not going to work just because of the way it's part of what we love about golf, right? You have to go out and earn it. But also, it's a little unfair to, be used in these negotiations, and yet you're still not getting paid. Is the answer appearance fees? What is there an alternate route that these leagues can take to sort of help out these stars, I guess?
Well, the dilemma they have is in the PGA Tour or the European Tour, in making their case, is they would make a great argument if they said, well, one of the great things about golf is that you all start from scratch at the beginning of the year, and that some unknown eventually or can at times compete with you, beat you, and that in a weird way solidifies you as a legend too. And so all these things are good for you, that it's this democratic approach. Mm. And then the problem they though have is that they could say, see, look at the World Golf Championship events. Those events lack a certain buzz because they're limited fields. They're rich guys getting richer. They're world ranking top 50 padding that number. And then those guys, the top ones would come back and say, oh, so you're saying that the product, that is what this Premier Golf League could be is similar to the WGCs. And it just doesn't quite, they're fine, but there is something missing. Mm-hmm. So you're saying your product's bad. So why, they could just start going back and forth.
Yeah.
At all the things that this exposes. And ultimately, to your question, fans, I think, really don't care that much about money. I after the FedEx Cup last year, not only did I have people saying I don't care that Rory got 15 instead of 10 as the person got the year before, but I felt a little dirty watching it. And this came from some of the most money loving people I know, the just red-blooded capitalists who were, and I'm just listening to this, but I thought it was fascinating because I, on the other hand, always thought it'd be kind of cool that you have this chance for that big check at the end, and who knows, maybe with a hot run in the playoffs, somebody sneaks in and changes their life. Yeah. But it turns out that people really aren't too intrigued by the rich getting rich, and this group, while they're offering appearance fees based on world ranking, which the agents love, because they'll take some of that, and they're offering a lot of money, a guarantee of probably $5 million if you stay with the league for the year. I don't know if they're making that a centerpiece. I really think their centerpiece is the idea of reimagining professional golf and adding this team component and the fun little mini dramas that come with that. And, that I think will be their focus. I sense from the things I've read, they've learned that the fan doesn't want to hear about the money that much.
Yeah. And I think that's probably true. The quote here is, if you had the chance to start, this is from the faux press conference that you referenced. If you had the chance to start again, you wouldn't create professional golf as it exists today. The league has that chance. And I think when you think about this stuff, you're like, you hear it for the first time, you hear it off the top, and you're like, well, that'll never work. Like, this is dumb. But the leagues that they reference, English soccer, right? Cricket.
Right.
Formula One, all these different, leagues that they're sort of alluding to. And I think the key, as I've been thinking about this, is the, is the team part of it led by a superstar? So
right.
if
right.
Rory has, if I'm a Rory fan and he's got, let's just say, Scott Stallings and Max Homa and I don't know, Zach Blair on his team, all of a sudden.
Quite a lineup.
It's an incredible lineup. I'm just making.
I was
up.
Thinking more it's going to be Shane Lowry, Padraig Harrington, and Seamus Power. I don't know.
Graham McDowell.
Graham G-Mac. Yeah.
Okay, so whoever he has, all of a sudden, because I think we all know, like there's only 10 or 12 guys in golf where people are like, I'm really a fan of that guy.
Right.
You know, and I think you. Sort of by osmosis become a fan of whoever's on that guy's team. And I think the team part of it, Jeff, I really think that could be, if it's done right, if this ever happens, really, really fascinating, really interesting. Do you get that sense of the team part of it really resonating with fans?
I do. And I sadly have neglected my duties in part because of this, distance report and also just the amount of news that's been coming out about this tour. Because one of the things I need desperately to do is a post explaining in a little more detail what I've seen of the team concept. But I also need to do some reading and you listed all those sports. There was some interesting debates during the Australian Open tennis because, Djokovic and others are trying to bring back elements of team tennis, which I am so old that I actually attended as a child team tennis at the Forum in Los Angeles and Billie Jean King started that. And so this team notion is interesting. And down at Torrey, I asked a lot of kids, like a creepy old man, you know, these, but I knew they were good golfers. So, and I knew their parents. So I wasn't like I was just walking up to them like some old creep. And I said, you know, and there's some, and a couple of these kids, they're really young. They're really good. They're PGA Junior League kids. And I said, so, what do you like competing more as an individual or as a team? And before I can finish the question,
yeah.
They're screaming out team. And I think culturally individual sports for some reason are losing a certain cachet. And it's beyond me. I need to do more research. I don't know why. Because I love individual sports, but I also, as I'm sure you do, have seen that as I've told people, when they were getting kind of, oh gosh, we got the President's Cup now. And I'd said to a few people, you know, the worst team event is often still better than almost every stroke play event on the planet outside of the majors because they're interesting. They're match play. There's drama. There's strategy. Chemistry, there are these loners suddenly having to play as a part of a team. And so I think that they are trying to tap into that, even though they'd be four person teams, but they end it with a playoffs. That's a ripoff of the Ryder Cup format. And I think there's something there that will, whether this happens or not, force professional golf to reassess. Obviously, the other reason they created the team thing, should be stated. It's clearly financial.
Yeah.
That these founding players could have a franchise. And then, you know, say in 4 years, Phil's decided, that was fun. But, my friend, Elon Musk has gotten into golf and Elon wants to buy 49% of my team or my franchise or 51%. Or JP McManus tells Rory, you know, you've done a nice job, but I think this would really be a fun thing for me. So you see where that's likely that it'll start with players, but it may not always stay that way. And I don't know how that plays out, but that's a problem they'll worry about it all happens.
And that's the allure of it is you have to be able to offer some sort of equity. You and I have had talks about equity in other situations in golf right now, but right. equity for these teams, I think that, cause like if you're going to, you know, Dustin Johnson, you're like, hey, you can make $7 million a year. It's like, whatever, man. Like I make seven already. You know, I don't know what the numbers are, but when you're talking about equity in a franchise that could be like a long-term deal, that's like a real thing. That is,
sure.
That's big time. I'm curious about what's your sense of the organizations, the different players that are sort of talking about founding this. Is it an investment for them where they're like, man, we can make a lot of money on this? Is it a prestige thing? Like what is their motivation behind all of this?
Well, they're obviously they've figured out some way to make money from it. But you know, they detail a lot of different ways where money is going out. And I think they just feel that, I mean, they even go, and I believe it was in the Q&A that they took a shot at the tour's nonprofit status that they, and I'm sure this went over really well with some of the more conservative, players on the tour, but noting that they'd rather pay taxes, because government will do a better job with their money than we would. I mean, that was kind of funny. And that's in their documents as well. They've been that's been their approach from the beginning. They do want to have a charitable component. So I sense though, ultimately they look at, Their money, a lot of money people, a lot of people who worked in some form in golf or with IMG or different organizations who simply look at the model that is there today, I'm sure, in just some sort of a brainstorming, shooting the breeze kind of session, started throwing these things around and said, well, there's actually a better way to do this. And then it evolved from there and they brought in other elements, and it's obviously very European driven in terms of that team approach mindset. But I think we're kind of catching up over here in the United States. And then, it's accelerated as they see this opening with, the television contracts, not having been signed or being in negotiated. And then you have these two guys in particular who are kind of at the back end of their career. And you could see where there's a case to make to them that here's a way for you to stay involved in the game past your career. You've done everything you can do on the tour. I mean, there are a lot of different ways. And here's a massive amount of money that you'll never get from the PGA Tour. And then obviously kind of chipping away at that notion that they're not getting paid what they should get paid. You know, that's just the one thing that I mean, I know that there's resentment from some, but I've never sensed Tiger resents how much or how underpaid he is. He's never expressed that. But who knows? He may feel that way. He's doing fine, but he could cash in a way in this. And I laid it out in a post the other day that I think is the numbers would be pretty staggering to people.
For sure. It's a true millennial disruptor model is what it sounds like.
Well, and I think that's the most fascinating thing. You know, I argued, down at Torrey or debated with some people, who tried to blow off my report initially. And then, you know, it really kind of took off when Bob Herrig and I sat, with Ron Green and waited and watched Phil hit drivers for an hour, and make two adjustments, with his little screwdriver. And then he came over and he did not know we were going to ask that for some reason. I guess his people didn't advise him. And so we got a quote from him. And then the next day, Rory brought it up.
Yeah.
But in debating this with people, it was fascinating to me to see how quick everyone was to dismiss it and not realize that, and again, I've had a chance to look at these documents and mull this for a long time. And I've been reluctant to report it because I wasn't sure how legit it was, but the professional golf model will never be the same now that this is out there. No matter what happens, it's going to force, it is a disruption and it will lead to some changes, whether it blows up the current television contract or not, I don't know, but, I'm really having a hard time seeing, how the European Tour and PGA Tour react. I think there's one scenario that makes great sense, but I don't sense that they've been organizations that have been working very well in conjunction, and it could really be a problem for them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think if you're a player, you have to look at this as a point of leverage. Like you said, no matter what the outcome is, like you're in a good spot and you can take advantage of it. Okay. You've given us a ton of time. I only have one question. I think it's, the question that everybody has about the distance report that came out today. We get this 9 to 12 month waiting period and it doesn't even start for another month. So it's like 10 to 13 months.
Yeah.
Which is like the most golf thing ever to make people wait that long. What's the eventual outcome here? Like what am I looking at in the summer of 2021 that is kind of the end result, because I've read all this stuff and there's a bunch of nonsense and there's like three or four things that are solid, like legitimate things. What do you think is the eventual result of the distance report that came out today?
I need to go back and read, because I wrote a book about this in 2004. But one of the many topics that I went into was the idea of a local rule. And they bring that up in this report. And as you note, the timing is deplorably slow. And, you know, David Dusek at Golf Week did a video where he kind of went through the scenarios of this. And, yeah, the earliest that the average golfer might be affected is 24 or 2025.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that when you read – it's a really beautifully written and well-prepared document in terms of knowing how hard it is to characterize these things. And they made up their mind. So there's no going back. They want to bring things back. So my sense is, in reading this today and just hearing the immediate reaction, why do we have to wait, is that that local rule element will be something that could be expedited, or their hand could be forced by somebody out there somewhere. It could be a famous club. It could be a very rich person who owns a significant golf course, who is fed up, and they somehow commission a golf ball that you have to play at this course or in a tournament at this course. And there's sort of a viral backdoor can of worms that's opened with that. But yeah. That because I just don't see that our society today being patient enough to wait for this. If they believe in this case, and there are certainly a lot of great old golf courses out there and a lot of influential people in the sport who completely agree with the sentiments expressed in this report. And frankly, if you know, the people who run tournament golf and want and think about the future of tournament golf, if they read some of the portions just in the summary, that really hint at the things that have bothered a lot of us, which is that the sport now is sort of discriminating and veering towards a one-dimensional type of player and scaring off. I mean, look at Colt Knost retiring, and his comment was, you know, I can't play this game. And it wasn't that long ago that Corey Pavin could compete with Fred Couples, and they were both at the top of the game and played it two totally different ways. And that was a beautiful thing. And I think they want to get that back. And the professional tours should want that too. It's better product. But I don't know what their reaction is going to be to this. So I sense that it will probably, the local rule element will become the thing. And then somebody will make a golf ball that suits that crowd. And it, and I've long felt like that was the way this would happen, but they've always been even resistant to the idea of a local rule. So that's been, what would related to equipment. And their case has always been a little bit difficult to understand on that.
Yeah. Well, it felt, I don't know about monumental, but it felt like a big deal. Just sort of the stuff that came out of the report. It felt like a turning point of sorts. I don't know how that plays out over the next.
Right.
I was thinking about it today. I was like, well, you know, I wonder how guys like DJ and Rory and Koepka are going to feel about this. And then I was like, they might not even be playing. Like whenever this eventually is like a real thing at the highest level.
And of course, done right, those guys, that's sort of the irony in all this.
Oh yeah.
You talk to a long hitter, if this is executed properly, your advantage actually certain people, I mean, we're talking about 10, 15 guys who drive the ball ridiculously long and for the most part, pretty accurately, it actually could be even better for them. You know,
for sure.
And Tiger has been very noble and not just coming right out and saying, there are a whole bunch of people who've been elevated and to a little bit higher level, just enough to probably have cost me some tournaments. I know Phil has figured that out. It took him a long time. So, but they can't say that. They'll get in trouble or they'll sound like a pompous jerk. But that is a case behind the scenes that I think these guys get. I think Rory gets it. I think he feels he's made that point a few times that he realizes Adam Scott's another one.
Yeah.
He gets really mad about it now. And it's hard to imagine, but it's like, wow, okay, my swing repeats. And I am very precise with my ball striking, and guy who is way less precise is not really exposed. The equipment masks it now, and so it's been interesting to see guys come to that realization.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Jeff, thanks for your time, man. Appreciate it. Could talk about this stuff all day with you, but you guys follow him on Twitter. Check out all your reporting on the PGL on jeffshackelford.com has been excellent. That's where I've gleaned most of my information. So keep up the good work, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.